Blog Talk Radio.
Start the clock. Good afternoon. At the tone, time will be real time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Let's Change the World. The Let's Change the World weekly talk radio show airs every 2 weeks, so that's every other week. And we do the same thing every week. We try to figure out a way to change the world. The Let's Change the World talk radio show is a product of the Let's Change the World movement. The movement is all about everybody doing whatever little bit we can, no matter how small it is, to positively impact somebody else's life other than our own or our community as a whole. And if we all do whatever little bit we can, then together we can change the world. We can move things. The whole point is to encourage everybody to get off of your dead ass and do something. Whatever you care about, no matter what it is, do something to help somebody else. Let's help make the world a better place. To learn more about the movement, visit www.thechangetheworldmovement.com. www.thechangetheworldmovement.com. And the radio show, it's not going to be the same today because my co-host, Cheryl Alisa, my one true love, my radio wife, will not be with us today. She had a surgery this week. It's not life-threatening, but it was a serious surgery. Don't worry about her. I want everybody to pray for her. She's in my prayers, but all of her fans, don't worry. She's fine. I just talked to her a little while ago. But she's in a little bit of pain, and I just want everybody to keep her in your prayers and pray for me that I can get through this show without her because she is my better half. And hopefully she's tuning in so she can hear me fumble my way through the show without her today. But in any case, Cheryl, if you're out there, we all love you. Get some rest. Take care of yourself. And I'm going to try to fumble through this the best way I can without you, my dear. We're going to do the same thing we do every week. We got ridiculous news. We got jobs, jobs, jobs. If you're interested in a job and you live in one of our key areas that we promote jobs in every week, get your pens and paper ready because we got some jobs we're going to list out for you. But I'm going to go through them real quick. We got a great show today, fabulous show today. It's an important show. There's been an ongoing discussion on our show about, the viability of black people participating in a political system. Should we vote? Is the system really designed for us? Is it a system of white supremacy? Or, on the flip side, some of the challenges that black people face right now, which include mass incarceration, poverty, a higher unemployment rate than our Caucasian counterparts, police brutality and murder, the injustice, so on and so forth. All of these things, there's another argument that says, how can we fix any of these things if we don't participate in the political system, which is where laws are made and where resources are allocated? So we're going to have that discussion. We're looking forward to a guest who is a regular contributor to our show. They'll be calling in about 15 minutes or so. And the title of the show is The Great Debate, Political Activism or Political Absenteeism, which makes more sense. Talk about that today as soon as he calls in. But first is ridiculous news. As you know, the world is ridiculous, and every week I point out a few things that illustrate that point. Some employees at Goodwill, they found three grenades in some donated goods. Of course, they had to evacuate the store, call the police, the bomb unit, the whole nine yards, this, that, and the other. They suspect it was terrorism. Who in the hell would want to terrorize Goodwill? This is how ridiculous your world is, and this is why getting involved is so important, in my opinion. This happened in Franklin, Wisconsin. A Goodwill store in Wisconsin was evacuated after employees found three grenades and a box of recently donated items. How ridiculous is that? Also, I mean, there's a whole lot of pythons and alligators and snakes and stuff being found in Florida. I live in Florida. I live in South Florida. 43 Burmese pythons weighing 2,000 pounds were found in South Florida, Collier County, March 19th. And I just can't, you know, fathom finding a python. You know, pythons are huge. They're huge. You've seen the movies. $600,000 worth of heroin was found in a convenience store in Canada. This was in Alberta, Calgary. Employees at a convenience store in Canada called local police after finding what authorities say amounts to approximately $600,000 worth of heroin. My question to my audience is, if you found $600,000 worth of heroin, what would you do? I suspect some of y'all wouldn't call the police. I'm just saying. Some of y'all would, some of y'all wouldn't. I mean, here we go in Florida again. 10-foot alligator captured at a school in Florida, Lakeland, Florida. A 10-foot alligator captured at a school, really. A 4-foot long boa constrictor found outside of a Florida woman's home. What's up with all of these animals? I remember the movie. There was a movie not too long ago where all the animals start turning against the people. Hopefully we're not coming into that era because people are really acting so stupid. Maybe it's time the animals are saying, hey, let's strike back. I hope not. Here's something we all dream about. You're riding down the street, and there's a Brinks truck, and it just kind of flips over for no apparent reason, and a big giant bag of money plops out of the truck, and you just happen to be there. This really happened in Wayne, New Jersey, March 17th. An armored truck in New Jersey dropped a bag full of money on a local highway, stopping traffic as bills were thrown all over the place. People jumped out of their cars, started grabbing money. Wow. Why couldn't it be me? And then people treat people really ridiculous, you know, and it's so sad. An Iowa waitress got stiffed. On a tip for not being normal looking. At least that's what one of her customers felt. A server at an Iowa restaurant felt like she was back in middle school when a stingy customer left a note reading, "Tips are only for normal looking people." Just tip the waitress. You know what I mean? Waitresses are trying to make a living, just like the rest of us. They work really hard. You know, they don't get a normal wage like the rest of us. They're looking, you know, they're trying to make a living off of the tips because their hourly wage is usually very little. You know, just give the waitress even a dollar or two or something. Don't be a jerk. That's just my opinion. Anyway, I see we got a caller out there already. Please stand by. I'll bring you on in just a moment. But first, we got to do jobs, okay? We do jobs that can change your world every week. I see you from the 678. Just hold on a moment, please. But I got to have everybody get your pens and paper ready. I'm going to shoot through these real quick today because we want to have a lot of time for the show because we've got a lot to talk about. But we're going to start with Florida, South Florida to be exact. If you got your pens and paper ready in South Florida, here we go. We're going to move through these real quick. You got to be quick. Florida RX Card. That's the name of the company. Florida RX Card in Coral Springs. They're looking for healthcare outside sales and marketing representatives. $2,200 a month. Okay? It's a 1099 position. $2,200 a month. That don't sound bad. Florida RX Card in Coral Springs. They're looking for social workers at HCR Manor Care. Social workers, HCR Manor Care in Plantation. Okay, look them up. Look them up online. Also, HCR Manor Care is looking for a housekeeping supervisor in Lauderhill. H C CR, Hotel Charlie Romeo, Manor Care in Lauderhill. Also in South Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, Rest Care, that's R-E-S, capital C-A-R-E. That's all one word, Rest Care, looking for health care assistance, home health aides, and so forth. Okay, so if you're into that, check that out. Some of these are healthcare jobs because I had a special request, so I'm going to run through a couple of these real quick. They're looking for a senior living advisor in Fort Lauderdale. A Place for Mom is the name of the company, A Place for Mom. Okay, look it up. They're looking for a caregiver, CNA, HHA, home health aide, home care assistants of North Broward. They're paying from $9 to $11 an hour. That's in Pompano, okay, Pompano Beach. They're looking for a family law assistant at Side Weber and Weintraub. That's Sid Weber. S-I-D-W-E-B-E-R is the first word, and Weintraub, W-E-I-N-T-R-A-U-B, public accountants. They're looking for a family law assistant. Check them out. They're in Fort Lauderdale. Okay, let's move on to Miami. They're looking for bilingual call center sales representatives at AT&T, $475 a week. If you're bilingual, check them out. That's in Miami, AT&T. Look them up. In Hialeah, they're looking for employment specialists. The name of the company is Tropical Cash, Jewelry, and Palm. Tropical Cash, Jewelry, and Palm in Hialeah. Uber is always hiring. They're looking for drivers. They're in Miami. Look up Uber. They're looking for a juvenile outreach specialist. The name of the company is Strategy and Management Services Incorporated in Miami. Strategy and Management Services Incorporated. Look them up. The city of Coral Gables is looking to pay $35,000 to $49,000 for police services assistance. I don't know if that's a police officer or if it's somebody working for the police force, but in any case, $35,000 to $49,000, probably based on the experience or prior military, so on and so forth. City of Coral Gables, check them out. Let's move to Northeast Ohio in Akron, my hometown. Akron Children's Hospital is hiring. Check them out. They're looking for home health aides. Akron Children's Hospital. Okay, also Milo's Tea. They're looking for product samplers. Product samplers needed. Part-time Milo's Tea, M-I-L-O apostrophe S. Tea, like the tea you drink. Family and Community Services is looking for housing income support workers, $13 an hour. You must have a valid driver's license and ability to meet agency requirements for driving insurability if applicable. So that's Family and Community Services in Akron, $13 an hour. Veterans Advocate is needed. It's the Family and Community Services in Akron, $13.70 an hour. Family and Community Services is looking for a Veterans Advocate. Got to have a valid driver's license. Look them up. Let's move to Cleveland. They're looking for a marketing assistant at National Safety Apparel. National Safety Apparel, marketing assistant. Owner's Management Company, looking for a courtesy officer. This full-time position has flexible hours, but requires a starting time of at least 6 p.m. 6 p.m. Compensation includes health insurance, 401k, and an employee rental. Hey, hey, hey. An employee rental. That sounds good. Cleveland, Ohio. Owner's Management Company. Also in Cleveland, $11.45 an hour. Cleveland Heights, University Heights Public Library is looking for a circulation assistant, $11.45 an hour for a circulation assistant, University Heights Public Library. Let's move on down to the ATL. Oh, man, the Women's Apparel Fashion Show, they're looking for, temporary people. Name of the company is, I'm just going to spell it, is J-O-D-I-F-L in Atlanta. $12 an hour. You're going to greet customers and guide them through our through their line. It's 240 Peachtree Street. 240 Peachtree Street, Northeast. 240 Peachtree Street, Northeast, suite number 2200. That's in the ATL, Atlanta proper. Okay, they're looking for, Uline is hiring. They're always hiring all over the country. Regional sales manager is what they're looking for in Buford, Georgia. Uline, looking for a regional sales manager. They're looking for a lead verification representative at Networks, N-E-T-W-O-R-X, field inbound calls from homeowners and assist them in finding a contractor. You must have the ability to make and answer hundreds of phone calls a day. That's Networks, N-E-T-W-O-R-X, looking for a lead verification representative. Delta Airlines is hiring in the ATL. They're looking for logistics attendant and some other positions as well. You got to have a valid driver's license for this particular position, which is a logistics attendant at Delta Airlines in Atlanta. Okay, let's move out of the ATL to North Carolina, Winston-Salem, my old stomping grounds. They're looking for a group travel advisor, Aladdin Travel, and Meeting Planners. It's the name of the company. Aladdin, like Aladdin's lamp. Aladdin Travel and Meeting Planners in Winston. They're looking for licensed unarmed security guards at Champion National Security in Winston. Okay? Check that out. Champion National Security. SNN, that's Sierra and November, SNN Communications in Greensboro is looking for experienced customer relations representatives. Experienced customer relations representatives, check them out. They are looking for, in Asheboro, Wolf Financial Incorporated. It's also called Integrity Mortgage Group. In Asheboro, they're looking for post-closing mortgage loan auditors. If you're qualified, check them out. Wolf Financial Incorporated or Integrity Mortgage in Asheboro. Okay, let's move up the Chi. Chicago, Illinois, y'all. They're looking for merchandisers in the Chicago area. Merchandising Services Company. That's the name of the company. Merchandising Services Company, $12 an hour, must have reliable transportation to get to and from multiple store sites. Okay, steady work starting now, $12 an hour. Uline, you can make up to $30 an hour. Distribution manager, trainee, up to $30 an hour. That's in Waukegan. In Chicago, Postmates delivery driver. Name of the company is Postmates. They're looking for delivery drivers, okay? They don't care if your car is old or new. They want you as a delivery driver. Check them out. $17 an hour at the Hyatt Place, Chicago River North. That's Hyatt Place, Chicago River North in Chicago. They're looking for guest service representatives right now. Guest service representatives at the Hyatt Place, Chicago River North. Also in Chi, they're looking for crew members, part-time and full-time. This is David's T, $68,000 a year. Let's see. Must have a valid driver's license. It's all they say they need. Or you must be flexible to work past normal shift time when necessary. But they're looking for crew members, $68,000. Okay, check it out. So there's a lot of jobs out there. Don't sit there and say ain't no jobs. They out there. We do this every week. If you have, if you live in a certain area and you're interested in us promoting some jobs or, you know, listing out jobs in your community, make sure that you contact us. Call in 818-739-8909. Let us know that you're looking for a job. Find us on Facebook. My name is Dale Davis. Look me up. Look up the Let's Change the World movement. Look up Unlimited Education on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. So There's no excuse. If you're looking for a job, let us know. And every week we have a show. We're going to put some jobs out there. Before we start the show, we already got a caller. I promised them I'd bring them on in. They probably got something to say right off the bat. So from the 678 area code, you know what? Before I bring you on right quick, I just want to say this. I can tell when the show is an important show. You know how I can tell? Because the devil is at work. Nothing is working right. The last 2 or 3 hours, nothing has been working right to get this show going. The studio wasn't working right, and now I'm trying to bring somebody on, and it's not working right. That's how you know you're doing something good is when the devil is interfering. But from the 678, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, Dale.
Hey, how you doing? Who am I speaking to? If you want to give you a name, you can. You don't have to, but let us know how we can address you.
Derek Jones.
Derek Jones, what's going
on,
my man?
Nothing much, man. I was following you on Facebook, and we were having a kind of quasi-deep discussion related to black in their position in society. And I was saying how blacks are the most hated race throughout the country. And we were kind of going back and forth with those questions and answers and comments. So this is my first time ever, you know, being part of the show. And so I just thought I'd go ahead and call in and give my 2 cents as far as the current topic, which you're talking about, as far as political involvement or just absenteeism. And so I'm interested to hear what the caller, not the caller, but the guest has to say about the topic, because, you know, I have a few things I want to say about that, but I just want to kind of see where the focus is going to be as far as either absenteeism or activism. So that's my whole
He'll be
story.
Calling in then probably just a few minutes here. What we want to do is, you know, there's a debate going on in the United States among black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some black people feel that, hey, you know, the system is a system of white supremacy. You know, you're just wasting your time as you vote. If you vote, your vote really doesn't count. You know, why participate? What we really need to be doing is either moving to Africa, or we need to be consolidating within ourselves and trying to uplift ourselves without participating in the political and economic systems of this nation, try to make ourselves sufficient, so on and so forth. Where do you stand? What side do you stand on?
Well, I definitely stand for political activism for the simple reason is that, you know, black folks in this country throughout history have been disenfranchised. And, you know, when you're on Facebook kind of typing and everything, you can't really get your point out or get folks to understand what you're really trying to say, just like when we were going back and forth with our conversation. But the issue, and I'll just use that word, disenfranchised, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that right there, I think it spans the scope of everything that a black person in this country is experiencing, either it be from a sexual orientation perspective, with the effeminization issues, from the promotion issue, jobs, you know, being the most qualified, first, last hired, first fired issue, all the way and beyond. And, you know, there's disenfranchisement in the family. Okay. You know, I'm 51 years old. Okay. I'm from Akron, Ohio. And, you know, we were basically an industrialized city back in the 70s, 60s and 70s. So everything in Akron was, you know, booming back then. And black folks back then really didn't have a problem getting a job because they could work for Goodyear, Goodrich, Firestone, General Tire, Cyberland, all those different companies. So it wasn't an issue, you know. But when those companies left back in the late 70s, there was a vacuum created. And no one, because of the type of work they were doing and the education required for that type of work, no one thought about, well, I need to go to college. Well, you had a university right there down the street, great university, University of Akron.
Actually,
and,
several of
you
them.
Know,
you got the University of Akron, Kent State University, Cleveland State's not that far away.
Well, yeah, you got Youngstown State, you got Cleveland, you know, Cleveland State, you
mm-hmm.
got Kent State, you got Akron U. But, you know, being from Akron, hey, I went to Akron U. Got a great education.
Mm-hmm.
Moved to Atlanta. I've been in Atlanta for over 30 years with my
mm-hmm.
University of Akron education. You know, so mm-hmm. getting back on point, though, this disenfranchisement issue spans everything. You understand what I'm saying? It spans everything from, like I said, sexual orientation all the way to promotion and moving on the job to even as far as going into business. And getting back to the political activism aspect of it is this. Now, I'm going to go off a little bit. I am a gun owner. State of Georgia. I have a license to carry my weapon. I have a natural right to defend myself. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
A natural right. But I'm also licensed by the state to carry it. Okay? And I take full advantage of that license. Now, too many times I talk to black folk, and their opinion on the issue is, oh, well, you know, it's the white man's law and this and that. And I'm like, hold up. You live in the state of Georgia. Last I checked, it did not say black man law, white man's law. It said the state of Georgia. So if you are a citizen of the state of Georgia, then you are protected and you have the same rights as anybody else in any other ethnic group to do whatever you want to within the confines of the law. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And it just really pisses me off that black folks want to be disenfranchised and be absent when it comes to political issues. And I'm like, no. If you want to get anywhere in society, you're going to have to be active in what's going on in your state and local government, and even on a national level. Now, I can go on about does
now,
your
let me ask you a question. Some
no,
people.
Go ahead.
Can I ask you a question? And our
sure.
guest is it just showed up. I'm going to bring you in just a minute, in just a second, Henry. So some people feel that the local and state government, it makes a lot of sense to participate in the local, especially the local government if you're black, but the national government, it doesn't make any sense to really participate in that because that doesn't really impact you. Do you feel the same way or do you feel differently?
I feel that on a national level, in some ways, my vote doesn't count. And the only reason why I say that is because of this electoral college and these delegates. Okay, now,
mm-hmm.
what we have going on right now is this Donald Trump nonsense and this Hillary Clinton nonsense, you know, all this crap going on. All right. But when you cast your vote in November to vote for the president, you are only just going through the motions as far as I'm concerned, for the simple reason that you, the person, are not electing the president. The electoral college is. So what they're saying is that, if the popular person for your state is a Republican or Democrat, then that's where they're going to place your vote, regardless of what your party affiliation may be. And I don't think that's fair.
Okay?
That's how I feel about it. But
okay, let me, just for the sake of it, there are a lot of people out there that don't understand the Electoral College, so I want to make sure, because part of our one thing that I want to make sure that our show always does is educate. And I think a lot of black people don't really understand how the Electoral College works. So, you know, if they understand how it works, then they can know if they want to agree with you or not. The way that it works is each state has a certain amount of electoral votes, and it's based on the basically population. Okay, Ohio is a state that you live in. I think they're like, it's like the sixth or seventh most populated state in the nation. So you've got quite a few electoral votes from the state of Ohio. Now, how those electoral votes are determined, for example, if you live in Cleveland, okay, Cleveland is a majority minority city. You know, lots of black people, lots of Latinos. So actually, Caucasians are a minority in the city of Cleveland. So in the city of Cleveland, they have an opportunity to have black electoral, a black electorate, if that makes sense. But that's only if you participate in the political process. If you don't vote for your congressmen and your senators and so on and so forth, then the Caucasians will, even though they're the minority in your community, you'll end up with Caucasian electorals, okay? So it's very important, in my opinion, that if you have a minority, a majority-minority population in your city, that you vote so that your electorals, they represent you. So that's Cleveland. Now, if you go to another city, let's just say Springfield, Ohio,
Cincinnati,
or whatever metropolitan is in that area, it's majority white folks, they're probably going to have white electorates. Now, in the end, all of these different areas within Ohio will vote. And in Cleveland, let's just say they vote for Hillary Clinton, but in Cincinnati, they vote for Donald Trump, okay, and whoever has the, you know, the most votes based on those electorals in the state of Ohio will win the state. So I agree with you to a large extent, but at the same time, it still, in my humble opinion, makes sense to vote. Because if you live in an area where you have an opportunity for the and here's the other thing too. We as black people assume that white people are not going to agree with us on certain things. When in reality, black people and white people, there are a lot of things that we agree on. We all want a lot of the same things. We want low crime. We want good education for our children. We want safe communities. We want economic prosperity. You know what I'm saying? We want a bright future for our children, you know, so on and so forth. So on a lot of these issues, it makes sense to vote right along with the people who think like you. And with all that said, I want you to hang around if you don't mind, if you have time. If you don't, we understand. I want to go ahead and bring on our guest so that we can get him involved in this conversation. Just one moment.
Go ahead.
Of course, you know, the devil is alive. I'm trying to bring you on, Henry. Give me a second. The studio's not working out right. I'm trying. Oh, there you go. Wait a minute. Henry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, you there. Great. How you doing today, first of all?
I'm great. Hey, I don't know why, but my mother is calling me, so I really need to find out what's going on with her, and I will call you right back.
Okay, that's all right. We'll continue the discussion we're having. No problem.
Okay, let me find out what's going on. All right.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so back to you. So how do you feel about what I just said?
As far as the electoral process goes and the vote itself, I agree with you. And every opportunity that I have to vote, I'm going to vote regardless. Mm-hmm. Because if for no other reason, there's going to show that the popular candidate, really who should have been elected, you know, that person should have gotten the vote in the case of Al Gore versus George Bush too. Now, Al Gore got the popular vote, which meant that society or the people wanted Al Gore to be president. But because the electorate and how it works, the electorate said that George Bush, outside of the state of Florida and its, you know, voting chads and all of that, they wanted George Bush to be president. So those things can be skewed however they want them to be skewed. Now, I don't necessarily trust these electronic voting booths, you know, with these cars. I really don't trust it. And there are things out there, these computer programmers, they can skew it however they want to, you know, whoever they want the candidate to be. So I think there is a higher power working somewhere where they have put a candidate in position to be president of the country for whatever reason that may be. Okay? Now, if you look at Barack Obama, he was president for two terms. The first term, I'm quite sure he won overwhelmingly because of the message. That second term, I'm not so sure that that's what the electorate really wanted, was him. So I don't know if that was some kind of conspiracy to put him back in office or if he just outright won the office, okay, because he didn't really
win
by
quick.
That many votes.
Let me address that real quick. The first term, you know, if you look at the statistics, President Obama won because of the black vote. You know, it was clear. Now, a lot of white people voted for him, or else he couldn't have won, obviously. But
exactly.
It was the black vote that really took him over the top. Now, right after he was elected, the establishment decided that they were going to obstruct him because the leader of the Republican Senate, Mitch McConnell, was recorded saying that they had to make him a one-term president. So they have vowed to obstruct him on, I think it was like the second day of his presidency. This man hadn't even made a good speech yet, other than his, you know, speech that he made on the night he was elected. You know what I mean?
He wasn't even inaugurated when he made that statement. He wasn't even inaugurated when they made that statement.
Exactly. That's my point. So they hadn't had time to know if this president was going to be a good president or not, but they already made a decision that they were going to obstruct this man. Now, so as a black man, the only thing I can say about that is I just feel it was about rape. I'm sorry. That's just the way I feel. Okay. Because there was no reason to hate this man or to be against him before he has had time to do anything. He just got elected by the people, and you're against him already before he even does anything? That's ridiculous. Why? There's no good reason. Now, right after that, he spent a lot of political capital on Obamacare. Well, first he spent a lot of political capital on reducing everybody's taxes. He reduced taxes for 97% of Americans, okay? And, you know, he spent a lot of money to bring back the infrastructure, this, that, and the other. He bailed out the banks, bailed out the American auto industry. And he spent an enormous amount of capital on health care. Now, the private health care system, and this is why I don't believe in voting for Bernie Sanders, is because he wants to expand Medicare and cut the private sector out of the healthcare business, and I don't think they're going to stand by and just allow that to happen. It's just not going to happen. We see what happened with Obama. First thing they did was put $1 billion worth of ads on TV calling Obama a socialist terrorist. You know, he wanted to build death camps to kill all grandmothers. He wanted to indoctrinate our children. He wanted to initiate a government takeover of healthcare. That didn't go well. You know, I mean, they said he wasn't born in America. He was a Kenyan-born terrorist, the whole nine yards. So, to make a long story short, they immediately turned Obama into the boogeyman. And he's been the boogeyman ever since, you know. And so come time for the second run for the presidency, okay, the establishment, by the second time Obama ran for office, hated Obama, absolutely hated him. All Republicans across the nation hated Obama. But he still won the election, and the reason he won the election again was because of the black and Latino vote. blacks and Latinos at this point still believed in Obama, and they pushed him over the limit. Now, what has happened since then is what I believe to be a conspiracy. I believe in conspiracies too, believe it or not. A conspiracy to convince black people that Obama is not for them, and the conspiracy worked. If you look at the numbers of support for Obama, they have faded ever since the beginning of the second election to date. And at this point today, the amount of black people who support Barack Obama are at all-time lows since he was elected in the first term. No good reason for it, because he's done more than any other president in history has ever done that benefited black people. But nevertheless, we don't support him anymore. Why is that? And we've got Henry.
Well,
he's back. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I think the reason why they don't support him now is because it's like they wanted something. Black folks wanted something specific from President Obama. What that specific thing was, I'm not sure. But that's what I get. The educated, and I hate to say educated versus uneducated, but it boils down to that issue in that the educated black folks knew that, okay, number one, no president is going to take one class of people and just do whatever they want to with that class of people or that race of people. They can't do it. You know, we're a system of laws and rules and regulations, you know, and branches of government. So it just can't happen. And, you know, black folks voted for Obama for the mere fact that he was black. And I firmly believe that greater than 75% of the people who voted for Obama that were black voted for Obama because he was black and no other reason at all. Secondly, all of the white folks that did not vote for Obama, an overwhelming amount of those people did not vote for Obama because he was black. You know, and that's the name of the game. You know, so folks would say to me, did you vote on Obama because he was black? I was like, yeah. Did you not vote on Obama because he was black? You know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you ask me an ignorant question like that, I'm going to give you an ignorant answer, and then I'm going to follow up with an ignorant question back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Because the thing is, I don't necessarily like all of the things that Obama has done. You know, being in the healthcare field myself, you know, being a healthcare professional in the field myself, people don't really understand what the ACA is all about. You know, there's a lot of things about the ACA they don't understand. And I see it all the time. In the ERs, I see patients coming in. They're using the emergency department as their primary care physicians, okay? And what the ACA has done is said, look, we're going to give you health insurance so that you don't have to be inundated with staying in an ER. That's just one aspect of the health of the ACA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One aspect. Now, what these private insurance companies have done, they took that opportunity to say, okay, it's not a very popular program. Therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to raise the rates on these deductibles and these deductibles and I forget the other thing. We're going to raise the rates. Employers have done and said, well, we can't afford to provide you with employer-based health insurance, so we're going to cut your hours. Now, legally, you have to work 40 hours to get full benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And anything less than 40 hours, they don't have to pay you any benefits at all. You understand? So what the employers did to get around that mandate was, okay, well, I'll just work you 24 hours or 36 hours.
And then you don't have to provide health
care. Yeah, I don't have to provide you health care insurance. And that's the bottom line to that. You know,
that's true. Now,
so,
as far as Obamacare goes, I don't want to go too deep into health care, this one particular law, because it'll take us in a whole different path than I want to take the show. But just real quick, Obamacare, in my opinion, and I know all about it because I studied it and researched it and wrote a lot of articles on it while it was happening. So I get it. There's a lot of good things. You know, it removed a lot of the discrimination out of the healthcare system. the people who benefit from the law the most are poor minorities, blacks and Latinos, who are so poor that they couldn't afford health care. In the states where the Medicaid expansion took hold, now they can get free health care on Medicaid. So very poor blacks and Latinos benefit the most from Obamacare. Now, the people who have jobs, you know, the overwhelming majority of the people who have decent jobs, you know, it didn't affect them one way or the other. But there is that group of people who had jobs that you talk about, where you got a stingy company who says that, hey, if we can afford to reduce your hours, we're going to reduce your hours so we don't have to pay for health care. And that's an unfortunate side effect. Now, in the end, I think that the law is taking us in the correct direction because we do need 100% health care in this country, just like every other industrialized nation in the world. But I think there are some things with the law that need to be fixed. That's one of them. And there are some other things as well. But repealing the law is ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. It's taking us backwards. Surgically repairing the things that need to be repaired within the law makes a lot of sense to me. And this is another reason why I say it makes sense for black people to participate in the political system, because we need to make sure that when these laws are drafted or fixed or repaired or whatever, that we are involved in that process, because we are the beneficiaries of whatever law gets made. You know what I mean? And this is just one example of a law that does impact us rather positively or negatively, and we need to be involved in that. Henry, let's go ahead and see if we can get you back on here. Here we go again. Having trouble, Henry. I'm trying to get you in. It's not working very well. Give it a minute. I'm still trying. But in any case, you know, the end result is we need to participate in these discussions. Now, right now, Mr. Obama is in Cuba. Mm-hmm. And what he is doing is he's trying to, because since 1928, no president has ever been to Cuba. You know what I mean? We've been pretty much saying they're our enemies since then, you know. And one thing that I think is the problem as far as black people are concerned is a lot of black people call white people the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, and I like where Obama is going with this trip to Cuba, because what he's saying is that it's unproductive to call somebody your enemy. You know, nothing good will ever come from it. If I call you my enemy, there's no way you're going to want to hear anything I got to say.
Exactly.
And in this nation, we have to realize that laws get made by a consensus of the people. And if I call the majority of this country the enemy, what makes them want to make any laws that benefit me?
They won't. And we're about to find out here in November.
Exactly. And so all it does is ignite a certain group of people. I'm still trying to bring you in, Henry, but I'm telling you, I'm having a real hard time here. It's the devil. So how do you feel about that? The fact that black people like to call people the enemy.
Well, again, 400 plus years of disenfranchisement, plus another 150 years of segregation, another form of disenfranchisement, and then what you're experiencing now. So it's kind of hard for me to trust you after 550 odd years of not trustworthy. It's kind of hard for me to trust you and to sit up here and call you a friend, and it's easier for me to call you a foe for the simple reason is throughout history, this is what you've done to our people. So in a way, in a sense, I can understand it. You know, Now, me personally, you know, I got a lot of white friends, you know. I have a lot of them. And they're not all bad, you know, because, hey, you got ignorance in all groups. But for me to just outright call you an enemy without knowing anything about you, you know, I think it's wrong. It's really wrong. But that's what we have first. When I see you, I see a white male or a white female first. You understand? So mm-hmm. I don't know the content of your character because I see the color of your skin. Now, some people will come with that ignorant old statement, oh, I don't see color. When you hear a person say they don't see color, that is a racist person to me. Because for you to have to say you don't see color clearly lets me know you see color. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's no way that you cannot know that I'm not a black man, that I know that you know that I'm not, you know, that person's not a black white man or a white woman. Okay? No. Accept our differences. Yeah, you're white. But you bleed just like me. And you might actually have something good to say. So, mm-hmm. you know, I try to suppress the fact that, okay, I see that white skin, but I really want to know mentally, where are your head? Where is your head? Before I pass judgment. I'm not just going to call you an enemy just simply because of skin color. You have to do something in order for me to call you an enemy of mine, regardless of your skin color, creed, or religion, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Now, the argument would be that from some people that when you call somebody the enemy, you're not talking about all white people. You're only talking about the white supremacists who they feel really run the show. Now, my argument against that is that if you are white and you call, you know, and let's just say there's a group of black people who are racist. They just hate white people, and that's that. And you call them the enemy when you're talking about black people. I feel like you're talking about me, too, when you say the enemy. So it's just counterproductive. I think that when you say, use that terminology, the enemy, white people feel like you're talking about them, regardless of who they are. They may not have anything to do with white supremacy. They may genuinely not be a prejudiced person, but they feel like you just call them the enemy. So therefore, it becomes unproductive. Does that make
Hello?
Sense? Henry, yeah. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I finally got you on there, man. I'm having so much trouble. I'm having so much trouble with the studio for some reason, and I apologize for that. I know you're probably ready, person at the scenes, ready to jump in here somewhere. So go ahead.
Well, I mean, I guess I can just say, well, first of all, I didn't catch the brother's name that's on the line with you.
Derek.
Derek, how you doing, brother?
Good.
I guess I can take it away. I'll take it off there. White people don't make no issues about calling us enemies or treating us as enemies. And you know, there are several hundred hate groups in the country established upon fellow Americans calling fellow Americans their enemies. But it seems as though the only people who get checked about calling a spade or enemies always has to be us. We never check the white people when they call us enemies or when they call us baboons and gorillas and say the only thing that we understand is a bullet in the head and all this kind of stuff, the white power. We say nothing to them. When they kill us, the first thing we cry and say is, as Christian people, we should forgive them and love. But the most of the people who's doing the killing are professing to be Christians too. But we never demand that they forgive, and if they hadn't done the killing in the first place, wouldn't nobody be in a position to forgive? So I don't know why the burden of being forgiving and the burden of not identifying who your enemies are always has to fall upon us, the people who have been assaulted since we've been here.
Well, I disagree. I think that black people are always checking white people for what they have done to us. I believe it's a constant checking. Every chance we get, we point at black people, I mean at white people, and say, look what you've done to us. You're to blame for this. You need to change this. You're the reason we're having trouble today, so on and so forth. And my thing is, I believe a lot, most of, and I'm just, some. I know people aren't going to agree with what I'm about to say. The overwhelming majority of the problems that black people face in the United States today, especially the worst of those problems, black people have a lot of responsibility for it. And I'll give you a few examples. White people aren't killing black people. We call white people the enemy. And we want to make sure that we prepare for when they eventually decide to raise up and destroy all black people or whatever the, we say the conspiracy is. But in the meantime, the worst enemy that black people have are other black people. Okay, white people aren't killing black people, but every single year there's 4,000, 5,000, or 6,000 young black men killed by other young black men. So if we want to protect ourselves from somebody, we need to be protecting ourselves from ourselves. You know, we're committing our own self-genocide. You know, and we are the ones who do not have the moral character to father our own children. So they grow up without fathers. Now, we can always point at the white man and say, well, that's because of the systematic oppression that has occurred for 400 years and slavery and so on and so forth has led to blah, 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 blah. I get all that. But at some point, we have to take responsibility and say, regardless of what happened in the past, today we're going to make a decision ourselves to father our own children. We can't count on white people to get us to father our own children. We have to make a conscious decision within our own race to do that.
Okay, can we address that then?
See, sure.
As far as the fathering the children is concerned, really, that's not really so much a failure. I mean, it is a failure to the black men who have these children and don't take care of them. Don't, so don't get me wrong. But a major part of that is the fact that our society has cultivated a group of men who are thugs, no good, don't want to work, lazy, drug runners. And these are the men who appeal to a lot of our young daughters. They don't want a nerd. They don't want a guy that's in school. They want to go out and lay with a guy that's no good. So they pick that guy who up front might even tell you, I got a bunch of kids that I don't take care of. I ain't taking care of no baby, okay? I got kids right now, I don't know who they is. But they, because they're so enraptured with the thug appeal, they'll screw these boys anyway and sometimes get pregnant by these dudes anyway on purpose. And then we turn full circle and expect the dudes to suddenly become this mature individual that he never was in the first place, and part of his immaturity was part of his appeal. So that you know, that has to be divided up correctly when you just say young men not taking care of their kids, because you're not going to flip a switch when that's how he's getting the sex. He's getting the sex because he's appealing, because he's a bad boy. And as far as the black-on-black crime and this type of thing, well, they, interestingly enough, they do psychological tests. They find out that when you take a rat and put them in a very close quarter, that all of a sudden they start fighting. Then if you take away food, they try to kill each other. So this is psychological. So when you cramp black people in the ghetto, you stick them all in one point, they're crowded, then you take away the resource, we behave the same way. It's scientific. It's psychological. When economics is up, crime is down. Economics is scarce, crime is up. So when you say that they don't make you take the drugs, they don't make you do these things, well, you're right. But they have discovered certain psychological patterns that if you put us in certain conditions, in where we're in poverty and then cramped, and then you throw in alcohol, and then you throw in drugs, and then you cause the drugs to not only be addictive, but you cause the drugs to be a means of putting food on the table. Now we're fighting over territory that we don't even own. Well, yeah, you're going to have a bunch of chaos.
Well,
so
it's more first of all, and I know you don't mean this in a detrimental way, but I'm just responding to it. We're not rats. We're very intelligent people. You know, we're at the top of the food chain as far as intelligence goes on this planet. So it's one
thing to
put a rat in a
Dale.
Yes.
Can I cut you off real quick? Scientifically, I think what he's saying is this. The reason why rats are used is because our DNA structure and rat DNA structure or mouse DNA are very, very similar. This is why you can grow organs off of a mouse and put it on a human, because our DNA structure is the same. So what they're saying is, what he's saying is that he's not calling us rats. What he's saying is that rats are the easiest things to reproduce, and their DNA is very, very similar to humans. Very, very similar. And that's a scientific fact. Okay, this goes back to genetics.
I understand that.
Okay,
I understand
so he's not calling you a rat in the vernacular sense of you're a rat or you're the lowest thing on the totem pole. He's simply saying that rats experimentally have done these things, and if you extrapolate that to human beings, the behavior is going to be the same. And the reason why that is because rat DNA and human DNA are basically the same. This is why you have all the drugs tested on rats. You have everything tested on rats. It's because they can extrapolate everything that happens to that rat and extrapolate what's going to happen to the human being. That's why they do that.
Okay.
Okay, so I just wanted to make that
clear. I had assumed that we all understood that very basic fact, that we understand why they test rats. I'm a little bit past that point intellectually. I understand why they test rats. But still, the point comes down that I was making is we are physically not rats. So what I'm saying is, although you can test a rat and come to some theories that, hey, you know, people will tend to do the same thing, in reality, we are much more intelligent than rats, and we have the ability to recognize that I don't have to act like that rat. Okay? I don't have to act like that rat did. That's number one. Number two is, we have to consider which comes first, the chicken or the egg. What I mean by that is, I heard Henry say multiple times, they put us in that situation. Many, many moons ago, we can say yes, because of, you know, we were brought over here against our will, we were enslaved, blah, 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 because of how we were treated in the past, it does, in fact, lead up to where we are today. I get that. But at some point, we have to be more intelligent than the rat and say, wait a minute, I get what the tendency is for us to do and be, and the tendency of our behavior, I get that. But at some point, I am intelligent enough to make a conscious decision that I refuse to be like the rat. I'm not going to shoot my brother, because I'm smart enough to understand that just because I'm in the ghetto doesn't mean I have to act like the rat and start fighting. I don't have to. I'm intelligent enough that I can make a conscious decision not to do that. And I think we need to make these conscious decisions that, regardless of where we find ourselves today, it does not make intelligent sense for me to kill my brother or to sell drugs to my brother and my sister. It doesn't make sense for me to have a gang and have a shootout on the corner over some drugs. And it does make sense for me to father my children. And it makes sense for me to teach my young men that they should be good fathers to their children. And no one is going to make us do it. Nobody's going to sit there and take us out of the ghetto. But if we make a conscious decision to change our own bad behaviors, then we can get ourselves out of the ghetto. Because what is regardless of what put us here, what is keeping us here are the things, the bad behaviors that we have amongst ourselves.
But you're overlooking the fact that a lot of the, what you would call bad behavior, if you want to use slavery as an example, Harriet Tubman said that she couldn't free many more slaves because they didn't even realize that they were slaves, meaning that they had been born into a system of slavery that they had adapted to and had become one with. They had embraced it as a lifestyle. That's all they knew. All they knew was a plantation. So today, you have kids that are born in the ghetto. They're born into a culture where your mama is not even 30 years old, and she got six kids. So, maybe not that old, but she has several kids by several different men. And they all smoke weed. They smoke weed right in front of you. She's doing lines on the table right in front of you. That's all.
So what I'm saying is,
Let me make my point. Because it's not just about making a conscious decision that I'm not going to do this. Because a lot of the kids who would make these conscious decisions, I'm not going to be like my daddy or I'm not going to be like my mama, a lot of those kids get stifled by the community. Like, well, I'm going to hit the books. They're made fun of to hit the books. You don't get the girlfriend to hit the books. You don't get the girlfriend to trying to have a job working at McDonald's, driving a hoochie when this dope boy over here is driving a car on rims and he getting all the fine women. See, you're young.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but it's all excuses to me. What I hear you saying is that...
How is it an excuse?
Because what I hear you saying is that just because I am in this, we are in this community, and just because when my child goes to school, the other kids are going to tease him if he raises his hand and he knows the answer, or just because if my kid goes outside, all the other kids have guns, so I'm going to hand my kid a gun too. You know, all of these things are, if we don't change it, it's never going to change. And so at some point, what I'm saying is we've got to start trying to change it. We have to change the very basic morals, values, and ethics that we live our lives by. Even if you live in one of these communities and in this lifestyle where everything is against you, you have to at some point say, even though everything is against me, I'm going to succeed anyway. So me as an adult, me as an adult, if I'm going to send my child to this school and this school is unfit, therefore my child is going to grow up like all the other thugs in the neighborhood, then it's time for me as an adult to get with the other adults in this community and say, look, we need to get together and go to the school board meeting, start getting involved in the school system, and start changing this school so that things begin to change. They're not going to flip the switch and change things. It's not going to change overnight, but you have to start.
But you're not. You're overlooking the fact that you're trying to flip a switch when you're assuming that you're going to have that many responsible adults that would even do that. Most kids adults.
You have to find the ones that you can find. You have to find the ones that you can find.
They're going to be spread out. Okay, that's one of the problems that we're having is that our kids are maybe kids, and the parents are not responsible anymore, and neither are the grandparents nowadays because grandparents are young now. Young grandparents are still in the club parking.
But here it's all an excuse for not trying. It's all an excuse for not trying.
No, but you have
to understand.
You have
to do it. If you don't do it, what's the other solution?
You got to listen to me. When you talk about success, to us, success may have been getting out of the ghetto. It may have been getting a corporate job or whatever. Success to a lot of these kids in the ghetto is being able to be that dope boy. So you have to understand there's been a change in the definition of terms. To be that successful pimp, to be that successful rapper, to be had the whole south side of the town locked down, to be a pimp.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Success.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a bad thing, but but it might be a good thing.
So if it's a bad thing, we need to do what with it? Continue to let it go or change it?
Well, I have no problems with changing it. But I'm saying
okay,
that
so that's what I'm talking about.
A lot of us.
So now, how do you change it? So our agreement, if we're going to move. Okay, go ahead.
Activism. Activism.
I say,
exactly.
You have to give these kids, you have to meet them where they're at. You have all that energy out there that's doing nothing but being self-destructive. And everybody seems to be afraid of that energy. So you're not going to take that energy and release it at some voting booth. That's not going to be enough for them to go stand behind some curtain or and press some levers or whatever they do, and they walk out there and they go, I guess I'm released now. That ain't going to do it for them. They are full of testosterone. They are full of anger. They are hurting. They are suffering. And every time the people who want to reach out to them, the only thing they hear us tell them is how bad the statistics are, how bad they are, how it's your own fault, and you're your own worst enemy, and you don't do nothing that they can latch on to. What do you expect for them? You're basically saying it's your fault. This is why Malcolm X was so important. This is why the Black Panther Party and all these different groups were so successful, because they knew how to rechannel their energy. Walking around the streets with a gun. Do you know how much of a blast that was for those young men? To walk around like the Black Panther Party did with those guns out. They displaced that energy in a positive way. To this day, they still call the Black Panther Party a terrorist organization. Isn't that ridiculous? They're calling the Black Lives Matter group a terrorist organization. Why? Because they fear that somebody's going to take that energy that we have and channel it for something that's going to be to the destruction of the black of the white power system. White people don't care about how much money you earn. They don't care whether you go to jail or you go to the corporate office. All they care about is how they're going to stay in power. That's all they care about. If you don't try to dismantle their power structure, you're okay with them. Rich or poor, in prison or out of prison, as long as you're not meddling with who has the final say, you get to go.
You know, I understand exactly what both you brothers are talking about, but I think what we're missing, the fundamental point of this conversation is what are black, despite what other races and creeds of people are doing, you got to have some benefit, 401k programs, you got to have all that. So what we're saying is, look, instead of trying to do all that crap in your 20s, become successful, go to college. Get some business about yourself. Because that street hustling crap ain't going to make it. When you're 40 years old and you still hustling, please, come on now. Y'all still there?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Completely cut off for a second there.
Yeah, so was I. I don't understand what's going on, but Dale is not on the line.
Yeah, he's the main one ain't on the line.
Yeah, it's just me and you. But anyway, man, I get what you... Hello?
Yeah, you're going in and out. I don't know what's going on.
They keep saying muted and unmuted, so I don't know if Dale is trying to connect the call back together or what. But, I mean, I get your point. You understand what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, we ain't flying no planes to Colombia picking up these drugs. So what can we do as society to stop all this nonsense?
Well, you know, let's do this. As I'm talking, you know, and as you're talking, once you, you know, kind of let me know, like, so I can let you stay there.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This is what I suggest. You know, it's radical, I admit, but we can't depend on the systems that are in place. We have to create something for ourselves, among ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that we cut off people or don't do business with other people or, you know, whatever. But we take everything we got and seek to be as self-sustaining as possible. Because when you start talking about doing things like boycotting and stuff like that, you know, do we really want to boycott and piss the white man off? What if the white man decide to boycott you? Instantly,
can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. It's the devil, like I said. I don't know what the heck was going on. Okay, go ahead.
This should give you a free show. This should give you a free show for this next week.
Sorry about that, y'all. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, no, where are you guys? Henry, go ahead and make your point.
Well, he asked.
He was making the point about boycotting and whatnot.
Yeah, he asked me what did I think that my solution was, and I said that my solution is that we had to create something independent of this system, but that doesn't mean that we don't still do business with whites. That don't mean that we still don't pay your gas bill or whatever, but we do everything we can to be as self-sustaining as possible. We become producers instead of just business owners. A lot of our business owners, you know, there's tons and tons of black business owners, but they're not the type of business owners that employ people. Like, I own my own business, but I don't employ anybody. So basically, I'm just making money for myself. If I don't take that money and put it back into another black business, and then there are black businesses and black-owned businesses. To me, a black-owned business is a business that's owned by a black person. But a black business is somebody that takes the profits from those businesses and put it into other black businesses. Because a lot of people will take the money that they get and put it right back into the white man's hands. So it don't really matter if you boycott Black Friday and spend your money at black businesses. If they all take their money and go out and spend it with whites, the next day you still did the same thing. So,
well, let me just say this about Black Friday. You know, people talk about Black Friday and talking about how much the black dollar is worth and this and that. I'm like, hell, if you boycott Black Friday, what about damn Red Tuesday? So what? You boycotted Black Friday, big deal. You're going to go out and spend that same money on Tuesday.
Exactly. Or Saturday.
Yeah.
So let me respond to both of those things. Number one, if you're talking about starting a black business where you hire black people, I'm all for it. No problem there. No disagreement. But just so you understand that when you start a black business, you're participating in the U.S. economic system. That's the only way you can start a black business is to participate in the United States economic system, and you're going to have to deal with the government depending on the type of business you're running. You're going to need permits, zoning variances, licenses, or whatever. You got to pay taxes, so on and so forth. So just so you understand that when you start a business, you're working within the United States governmental and economic system. Otherwise, it will not be a successful business. It'll be an illegal business. Secondly, boycotting is one of the ways that you can get things done as far as activism. Activism is not just voting. Activism is voting. It's also being a mentor to children. It's also boycotting, it's emergency elections, it's protesting, it's petitions, It's a whole big variety of things. It's getting making yourself newsworthy so that the media covers you. And yes, it is about voting as well. So activism covers it's this radio show. This radio show is activism. Activism covers a big variety of things. Now, when it comes to boycotting, if you just want to talk about one part of activism, it makes absolutely no sense to boycott a business. Okay, let's just say Black Friday. When you boycott a business that employs a certain amount of black people, you are actually hurting your own people when you boycott that business. It's a terrible strategy. Okay, when you talk about protesting, okay, if you're going to protest and your way of protesting is to burn down your own community, now the people who you're trying to help get up in the morning and have no job to go to because you burnt the building down. And you have hurt the property values in your own community, so that people's houses are worth less than they were before. And you have, and who the heck is going to locate a business in your community to offer jobs because they're scared you're going to burn their business down now. So when we're talking about activism, I'm talking about intelligent activism. I'm not talking about nonsense. The problem is that way too many black people, when they do try to get involved, they're simply not educated on the proper way to get involved. And that is something that needs to change as well. We need to improve the education of our young people so that they understand how to make a difference. And yes, part of it would be to grow up and possibly become entrepreneurs versus growing up to be drug dealers, or growing up to go to college versus growing up to be a gang member or a pimp or a prostitute. You know, and it does require us to re-educate our young girls not to open their legs to every young thug they find. And we need to educate our young men on not to stick their thing into every young girl who looks nice. And we need to teach them to follow their children. So it starts with the very basic moral values and ethics education that we deliver to our young people so that we rear a new generation of people who simply do the right thing. You know, we have to rear our young men to be good fathers. We have to rear our young women to have self-respect. And we need to rear our young men and women that you do need an education, not just so you can work for somebody, but even if you want to be an entrepreneur. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, that may begin with getting a job so you can save enough money to become an entrepreneur. This is how the system works in the United States. If you try to go outside the system, you're doing something illegal. And if you do something illegal, you're going to help fuel the mass incarceration problem.
I agree with you.
Heard you say all of those things. I think that you're well able to create your own system of doing things and becoming self-sustaining without being doing anything illegal. So I don't have a problem with nothing that you said. You know, it's just that when we use the system, we have to use it for a purpose. Use it for your own purposes versus just using it to fit in. We, as black people, hate to admit the fact that we are a separate nation. We seem to think that everybody loves us. We seem to think that we are just like everybody else here. That's not true. I mean, I don't care what it says on paper. I don't care what your friendly white neighbor tells you. There's places you can go in this country that they don't want you here. There's people that, as a matter of fact, there used to be a website called thechristianparty.net. On that website, it was a racist website. Thousands of people had taken a poll, white people, as to whether or not they should deport black people back to Africa. It wasn't about if they should, it was about whether they should deport them back without nothing or deport them back with some money. Thousands of people had taken this poll. How did they do that? We are not welcome here. The first thing, when you get on the internet, the first thing they say to you is go back to Africa, nigga. You wouldn't say that if you thought that you was a full-blown citizen and you belong here. You wouldn't dare tell somebody else to go back somewhere else that they don't belong to, because if you're truly an American citizen, you don't belong in Africa, now do you? You belong right here, right? If that's the way they look at it, they don't view us that way. But for some reason, we don't want to get that through our heads. We keep trying to fit keep trying to compromise with our enemies. And our enemies in this case would be those who hate us. And I don't mind calling the white supremacy my enemy.
Okay, we're just about out of time. We got 3 minutes. But, you know, I just disagree that we're not wanted here. I think we're not wanted here by certain people. I agree with that. I agree that there are white supremacists, and I agree there are racist people who don't want us here. But when we talk about the United States as a whole, I don't think that we're not a part of this country. And I don't think it's productive to teach our children that we're not a part of this country either, because 99% of us are never going to go anywhere. Okay? Most of us are going, most black people will live their entire lives and never even visit Africa. Okay? They're going to be stuck right here. Now, so we need to get over the fact that we think that we're not, this is not our country, that we don't belong here. We helped build this country. This is our country. Okay? We have black senators. We have black congressmen, mayors, governors. We've got 130,000 black millionaires in this country. We own our own media outlets. We have black cities in this country. Okay, you know, almost totally black cities in this nation. This is our country. Most of us aren't going anywhere. We're going to be here for the long haul, and we need to recognize this is our country. We helped build it. We fought in its wars, and we deserve our share of the spoils of this country. Now, if you want to build a business, you're going to have to build that business within the laws and regulations of this country, or it is going to fail. Okay, now it's okay if you want to build that business and hire black people, and it's okay if you want to circulate that money within your community. That's all well and fine. These are basic strategies that make sense. But as long as you understand that you are not bucking the system, you're going along with the system. That is the system. You know, to get an education and become an entrepreneur and hire whoever the heck you want because it's your business, and circulate that money however you want, that's America. That's the American way. It's the American system. And we need to start mentoring our children. We need to start getting involved in the educational system and start making sure our kids are providing the proper education. I mean, the schools are providing the proper education for our children. This has been Let's Change the World. We're going to do this again in 2 weeks. Come back next time, everybody. I see a lot of people out there. None of you dialed in, dialed that number one to come on and express yourself. But hopefully you'll change your mind in 2 weeks. Come back and express yourself. Until then, I'm going to leave y'all with something that I hope makes a little bit of sense. Thanks, Henry. And what's your name again, sir? I forgot.
Derek.
We're going to keep in touch, okay?
Definitely.
All right. I'm going to leave y'all with this one. Hopefully y'all remember this, the great Michael Jackson.
We are the ones who make a brighter day. So let's start here. must lend a helping hand.
We are.